Hello, everybody. This is Parshas Bo'i. And the Parsha begins with Moshe coming to Pare and asking again for Pare to let the Jews go. Pare says no. Moshe Rabbeinu says, okay, we're bringing another Makkah. And Pare's servants, Avdei Pare, tell Pare, look, don't you realize what's going on? The country's being destroyed. You got to let them go. So Pare calls Moshe Rabbeinu back. And in Perek Yud Pasuk Ches, the Pasuk says, Vayushav Moshe v'sa'aron al Pare. Pare gets them called back. And Pare tells to them, listen, go serve your God. Mi v'mi ha'holchem. Who and who are going? So the Baal Torah makes an interesting comment. He says, what's mi v'mi? Who is the, who and who is going? He says, Pare tells Moshe, look, what are you guys so crazy about going out to serve Hashem? Don't you know, says Pare, that none of you guys are going to make it to Eretz Yisrael? The whole entire generation, apparently Pare somehow knows, whether through stargazing, and somehow Pare knows that nobody is going to make it except for two people out of the entire nation that wants to go now to serve Hashem. Only two are going to make it to Eretz Yisrael. Says the Baal Torah, Mi v'mi ha'holchim is gematria of Kalev and Ben Nun. Which is Yeshua ben Nun and Kalev ben Yefuneh. They're the only two out of this whole generation who actually make it to Eretz Yisrael. So Pare is telling Moshe, come on, what are you fighting for? What's the point? Only two people out of this whole entire, well, it's millions of people, who are going to make it. What's the point? So Moshe Rabbeinu responds, says Baal Torah, he tells him, Binareinu uvzkeinenu nelech. We're going to go with our young and with our old. Says Baal Torah, Moshe Rabbeinu is responding to Pare, says, not true. The gzera, this decree that everyone has to die in the Midbar, will only apply to people from the age of 20 to 60. So the children, the ones under the age of 20, and the seniors, the ones over the age of 60, they are going to go into Eretz Yisrael as well, not just Yeshua and Kalev. That is the Baal Turim's Pshat and Pasuk. The Ruach Eliyahu comments, he says, you see from this Baal Turim something very interesting. What exactly is Pare's claim? Pare is saying, look, it's not worth it because no one's going to make it to the finish line. No one's making it to Eretz Yisrael except for two people. And Moshe Rabbeinu doesn't really argue the point. Moshe Rabbeinu just says, you're wrong. There's more people who make it to the finish line. It's going to be the young and the old as well will make it to Eretz Yisrael. It seems that Moshe Rabbeinu even agrees to Pare's point that if you're not going to make it to the end, if you're not going to finish the job, it's not worth it. Says Rabbi Yisrael, you see from here a very, very kind of very important lesson, which is that a lot of times in life, we start something, we get excited about it, we get motivated, and then we settle. And we say, okay, look, we did a lot of good. No, we went very far, but okay, look, now it's too hard, it's too much, we're gonna quit. And Pare and Moshe are both telling you that absolutely not. Mi v'mi yaholchem, who's going to make it to the end? You got to go to the end. You got to make it happen. And that is something that we have to learn from the parasha, is that you never quit. You're going to do it, you do it to the end, and you push yourself to make sure you finish it and don't stop short in middle. I remember Philadelphia Yeshiva. So Yeshiva would always, you know, Yeshiva, this man would go deep into the summer. And there would be guys who want to go for different reasons. They want to leave early at the end of this man. They're ready, it's been a long man, and they're tired, they're burnt out. They don't want to learn anymore. And there was once a kid who, he wasn't learning anymore. He was basically just sleeping in the dorm, and he wasn't coming to classes anymore. And his parents called up the Yeshiva, Rabbi Yisrael Zatzal, and they asked him, look, just let him go home already. He's not doing anything useful anyways. He's just sitting there in Yeshiva, spacing out. Just let him come home. What's the point of making him stick it out to the end of this man? And Rabbi told him this point. He said, if you let him come home early, you're teaching him to become a quitter. Yeah, you're right. Right now, he's not doing anything useful. He's just waiting around. But he has to learn that you have to finish his mind. You have to finish what you start. You can't be a quitter. And that, I believe, Rebellius saw it, like he pointed out in this week's parasha from this Baal Turim. Later in the parasha, in Perek Yud Pasuk Chav Ches, Moshe Rabbeinu comes to Pare again after Makas Cheshech, and he asks him to let Klal Yisrael go. Pare refuses. And Moshe tells him, look, if you don't do this, we're going to destroy Mitzrayim. And Pare tells Moshe, he says, Leich mi alai, get away from me, hisham alecha, watch out, al toisef ro'is panai, don't come back and see my face, because ben yoyim ro'is panai tamas. The day I see your face again, you're a dead man. I'm going to kill you, says Pare. And obviously, Pare found out later, that Pare actually came running to Moshe after Makas Becheres and begged him to leave. But Pare goes and tells Moshe, if I see you again, I'm going to kill you. Now, it's a true point. The Mefarshim Rai tells us that the fact that Moshe Rabbeinu was able to get this far, going back and forth to Pare after he destroyed half Mitzrayim, and Pare keeps letting him back in, that alone is a nace. The fact that Pare didn't kill him the first time. But the question is, what's Pare thinking? Really? You're going to kill Moshe, and then all of a sudden these Makas are going to stop? So Rav Dessler explains that Paroi fell into the same trap that all of us fall into, which is shooting the messenger. Paroi gets so caught up and is like, look, if Moshe stops coming and stops telling about the Makkos, then Makkos will just go away on their own. And the truth is, it's not true. Shooting the messenger never works. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is sending messages to Paroi that he has to shape up and he has to let Klal Yisrael go. And if he's not going to, then HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to keep bringing Makkos. Shooting Moshe, stopping Moshe, not hearing the messages from Moshe, it's not going to make a difference. And that's something we all have to take a lesson for ourselves, is never to fall into that trap of maybe if we just avoid the messages and we avoid all the things Hashem sends us, maybe the problems themselves will just go away. And it's not true. You have to just listen and take a lesson and shape up. There's a famous tzaddik in Eretz Yisrael named Yaakov Hillel. He's a big Rosh Yeshiva. He has a bunch of kailim. He's also a very famous mekubal. And people asked him once, you know, how do you know there's all these kind of different mekubalim out there, and there's all different kinds of phonies out there. So how do you know if a mekubal is real or if he's a phony? How do you know the real from the fake? So he told them that there's a Meshech Chacham on this week's Parsha that he always uses and he feels is really the key to defining who's real and who's fake. Meshech Chacham points out that the Parsha says in Perek Yud Aleph Pasuk Gimel that the Ish Moshe Gadol Ma'od Beretz Yitzrayim, Moshe Rabbeinu, the man Moshe, became great in the land of Mitzrayim, be'enei avdei Paroi, in the eyes of the servants of Paroi, ube'enei ha'am, and in the eyes of the nation. So, says Rosh Chacham, what are these two things? The enei avdei Paroi, enei ha'am. And he explains that throughout history we've seen that there's two ways somebody can rise to greatness. Somebody can be a truly brilliant individual, truly knowledgeable, a big Talmid Chacham, have stellar midas, and that his greatness can be what makes him become a gadol and become the leader of the Jewish people. Or he can do really strange things and crazy miracles and weird stories and a lot of just a kind of very, very out of the norm type of behavior. And the people start to come to him and say, wow, you know, this guy is so strange. He wears tefillin all day and he walks around in a talus and he gives out amulets. There's all kind of stuff. And people get excited about him. And then some people start saying miracle stories that happen with him. And hype builds up to the point where even people who are relatively intelligent start to say, look at this, you know, there's no smoke without fire. If everyone else is talking about him and he has all these followers, there must be some truth into him. And eventually he really sweeps up into a big crowd, as with all the false messiahs and the like. Says Meshech Chacham, so how do you know? How do you know? Which one is which? Says Meshech Chacham, the difference is who spotted him first? Who chose this person? You see, a person who's a big Talmid Chacham, who has amazing midas, the regular person who sees him, the regular simpleton, doesn't get impressed by him because he just looks like a very, you know, quiet, well-behaved, you know, respectable person. Nothing exciting about him. But the leaders of a generation, the ones who themselves have the Chacham HaSatira, they get excited about him. And they come in and they pick him and they give him power and they tell him to take over on a certain level, and they rise him up into leadership because they can see the value of a real Talmid Chacham and a real tzaddik. Whereas when the people putting this person into power are the more simpler people of society, the ones who have less of a kind of ability to understand what's chashiv and what's real and what's important, people who just like to see exciting miracles and strange things, then you know when the riffraff is the one who puts him up, you know that there's nothing good coming from it. And that's what he says. With Moshe, he was first noticed and first recognized to be a great man by the Avdei Paroi, by the servants of Paroi, which is the Chacham and the Mechashvim of Paroi. Paroi's own advisors said to Paroi, this is real. Etzba Lekim, he said. This is legit. This is not Kishu. This isn't bogus. This is the real deal. And then the Enei Ha'am, afterwards, the rest of Mitzrayim got involved, and they said, okay, well, Moshe, he's really something. Once the Enei Avdei Paroi recognized it, then the Enei Ha'am as well. And says, Yaakov Hillel, this is the way we always have to recognize about who we trust and who are really our leaders. They are the ones who are chosen by the previous leaders, the ones who can really tell what's important and what's not. It's famous that Shach Zatzal, before he was chosen, the Baron Cutler went and took him out of Panimit Yeshiva, where he was sitting and learning day and night, and he pushed him to the public arena to take over the political leadership of Eretz Yisrael. But before that, and even once he was chosen, the Briskerov was so shocked the Rabbarim picked him. He said, Reb Shach, he's such an Eloi. He's the one who's famous. He would walk around sometimes with his hand. If someone saw him once walking home with his hand kind of like on his side as if he's holding a watermelon, but there's no watermelon there. Someone asked him what happened. He's like, oi, the watermelon. He forgot about it. He was so busy learning, he used to get distracted. He couldn't remember the watermelon. He was somebody who was completely and totally involved in Torah. He had no connection to anything else. But Rabbarim Kotler saw that he could be the next Gadol HaDar, and he chose him. And he ended up becoming probably the most politically savvy and shrewd leader Klal Yisrael had for generations in Eretz Yisrael. And it was chosen by the leaders of Klal Yisrael who understood what's really important, what's not. And that's how we choose our Gedolim. That's how we decide who to listen to, and not just based on who goes viral on TikTok and who everyone else is excited about and makes up stories about. Later in the parsha, in Perek Yud-Beis, Pasuk Lamed Vav, the Torah tells us how when the Jewish people left Mitzrayim, Hashem commanded them to borrow stuff from the Mitzrayim. And the Pasuk says that Hashem made a nace that the Jewish people found favor in the eyes of the Mitzrayim, Vayash Ilam, when they lent them everything. And says the Pasuk, Vayenatzalu Es Mitzrayim. They emptied out Mitzrayim. They managed to get so much gold and silver out of the Egyptians that Mitzrayim was left empty. So the Gemara in Brachas of Tesla Beis brings an interesting machlekes. The Gemara says, Amar of Ami, says Rabbi Melamed, this teaches us that they made Mitzrayim kimitsuda she'ein badagon, like a bird trap that has no more grain in it. Rish Lakish, Amar, says Gemara, different opinion. Rish Lakish says no. Asu'ah, they made it like a mitsula, like the depths of the sea, she'ein badagon, the deep down in the sea where there's no fish anymore. They made Mitzrayim like that there's no more fish in there. And the obvious question old Mepharshim want to know is, what exactly is the difference between these two Mishalim? The Gemara makes it sound like almost it's a machlekes. Did they make it empty like a trap without grain? Or did they make it empty like the depths of the sea which doesn't have any fish? What's the significance of these two Mishalim? So the Ben Yayada there says a fascinating thing. He says that we know that there's a prohibition in the Torah to move back to Egypt. Yet, already at the time of Ben Yayada, already at the time from the Rambam and the Rishayim, there was already many Jews who were living back in Egypt. And there's really a machlekes amongst the Rishonim whether or not a Jew is permitted to go back to Egypt or not, even though seemingly there's an open pasuk in Torah saying you can't go back. So how do you reconcile? How do you explain this? So the Ben Yehuda says that the debate amongst these Rishonim was as follows, that there were some Rishonim who held that the reason why there's a prohibition to move back to Egypt was because when the Jews left Egypt, on a Kabbalistic level, they did is that every single country that the Jews live in, there's what's called nitzaitzes. There's these certain sparks of kedusha which are spread all over the world. And the Jews, as they live in every country, they take out that kedusha and they bring it, kind of elevate it and bring it to its final tachlis, its final purpose. And Mitzrayim, once the Jews were there for 210 years and they finally left, there was nothing left of kedusha. There was no nitzaitzes of kedusha left in Mitzrayim, and therefore a Jew can't live in a place where there's no Kedusha left, so therefore Jews are prohibited to move back to Mitzrayim. However, say the Rishonim, once some Jews sinned and they went back to Mitzrayim, then every time a Jew sins, every time a Jew makes a mistake, there's certain Kedusha that's shed and left in that place, and eventually there were enough Jews that sinned and moved back to Mitzrayim and were doing a veris there that there became Kedusha, so to speak, left in the ground of Mitzrayim that had to be taken out again. And therefore, at this point, now Jews could move back because Mitzrayim becomes like all other lands, which has Kedusha there, which has to be removed. Other Rishonim, the ones who held that the Torah's prohibition is still in play, so to speak, still in act, they held that nowadays doesn't make a difference. Mitzrayim was so fundamentally cleaned out from Kedusha when the Jews left Egypt that there's no matter what you do, it's hopeless. Mitzrayim is a place where there's no Kedusha left and a Jew is not allowed to live there. It says about Yad that this machlekes is really rooted in this machlekes of here in this Gemara. You see, a mitsuda, a bird trap that has no grain, you can always put more grain in there. It's not fundamentally empty. It's just the birds ate all the grain, and now you put some more grain, and you can do it back. And that's the opinion of those who held that nowadays Mitzrayim can be, so to speak, relived in because the Kedusha can be put back in there. Where the Shlakish says, no. They made it like a Mitzula, Shein Badagon, like the depths of the sea, which has no fish, that there's never going to be fish there. That place is fundamentally empty. And therefore, Mitzrayim is the same. Mitzrayim is like a Mitzula, it's like the depths of the sea, there's never going to be Kedusha in again. And therefore, you're not allowed to ever move back to Mitzrayim. Beautiful Ben Yehuda on a fascinating historical machlekes of whether or not a person can live in Mitzrayim nowadays or not. So I'll end off with one last thought. At the end of the parasha, we have the mitzvah of Kedushas Bechayr, that the Bechayrim and Klal Yisrael, the firstborns, they became sanctified through through the Makas Becheres. Makas Becheres, all the Egyptians' firstborns are killed, and the Jewish firstborns were left alive. And we are commanded from now on that the firstborns have a Kedusha. Originally, they were supposed to serve in the Beis HaMikdash instead of the Kehanim. Once the Chet HaEgel happened, they lost that, and they have to kind of redeem that Kedusha by giving the 5 silver coins to the Kohen. But there's a letter from the altar of Kelim, which he sent to Baron Rothschild. And he asks a very, very, kind of very, very interesting question. He says, you know, usually to become Kaddish, to become holy, a person has to do something. Right? Yeah, a person becomes holy through elevating himself, through learning Torah, through doing mitzvahs. The Becharim over here literally did absolutely nothing. They were sitting there in their homes with the rest of the family, eating the Karban Pesach, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu went and jumped over their homes and killed the Egyptians. So what exactly infused these Becharim with Kedusha for eternity? That what did they do exactly? Why do they deserve such a level of Kedusha? It says the altar of Kelm that Torah is teaching us something very, very important. Torah is teaching us the power of Kiddush Hashem. You see, the Becharim, you're right, they didn't do anything. But ultimately, through their very existence, they were a vehicle of bringing out Kiddush Shem Shemayim. People saw that the Jewish firstborns were still alive, and the Egyptians were killed, and they saw the clear Hashgach of HaKadosh Baruch Hu going in and choosing between the Jews and the Egyptians. And because they were the vehicle, they were the enabler for Kiddush Shem Shemayim, that alone gave them Kedusha, eternal Kedusha, gave them holiness for forever. Says the author of Kelm, if you can see the power that Kiddush Hashem has, if you see how important it is, imagine all the more so if a person does take an active role in bringing Kiddush Hashem Shemayim. Imagine a person, instead of just being passive, he actually goes and he involves himself in making Kiddush Hashem Shemayim, in supporting places that bring out Kiddush Hashem Shemayim, that going to learn, to daven, to do mitzvahs, and literally showing people that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is real, his Torah is real, and I serve him, and bringing out HaKadosh Baruch Hu's Shem Shemayim and being Mekadosh in public, how much more Kedusha that person will gain for himself and for his family for eternity. We should all be Zeicha to Mekadosh Shem Shemayim and have a wonderful Shabbos.